Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. In this episode, Dane is stepping onto an unexpected stage, the orchestra. Dane is joined by Roeet Feldenkrais. Roeet is an internationally recognized conductor and entrepreneur known for her dynamic approach to classical music and leadership. Roeet is the founder and CEO of BHZ Consulting Group, a firm specializing in leadership development through music. Together, they talk about what it really takes to build trust in the first 5 minutes, how to lead without micromanaging, and how the best leaders, like the best conductors, create the conditions for others to succeed by setting the vision, leading by example, and knowing when to step back so their teams can shine. Whether you're leading a business, a team, or a creative project, this conversation will leave you rethinking how you show up, how you bring people together around a clear vision, and how you can avoid burnout while still performing at your best. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Roeet Feldenkrais. Roeet is an award-winning orchestra conductor, a public speaker, a performance coach, and an entrepreneur, the CEO of BHZ Consulting Group. So it's going to be fun diving into some elements of teamwork and leadership from, you know, the orchestra into the corporate environment. Welcome, Roeet.
Thank you so much, Dane. It's such a pleasure being here with you.
It's going to be a high energy conversation, I can tell already. We were just talking this morning about all the cool stuff we can dive into. And I love the fact that you talked about your time in the world of music and your interest in connection between people. So maybe we start there. Like, how did it all start for you?
Wow. How did it start? So, when I was growing up as a young girl, my music teacher at school discovered that I could sing, that I had this musical ear. And so she decided to teach me, you know, the basics of, you know, of music notation, theory, things like that. And I was instantly drawn to that world, instantly. So I started out as a soprano singer. And I moved to the States a few years later, and there as well, you know, the school teacher immediately recognized, like, the same story again. And I understood that, okay, this is something that that I really like doing. It gives me, you know, such joy. And so when I got back, I grew up in Israel. So when I got, when I moved back to Israel, I joined a very, very famous children's choir. So this was an amazing opportunity because we traveled the world doing concerts for, you know, prime ministers, presidents. We performed for President Clinton, for example, like everyone that you can imagine. And, you know, with the, like, leading opera houses, orchestras, things like that. And so because I had the chance to see all these amazing conductors, soloists, etc., I was so drawn to that world that I decided that, okay, you know, singing is amazing and it's still, you know, it is my primary instrument, but conducting is actually what I want to be doing. So that's how it all started. And then I went on to study professionally, got my master's in orchestral conducting and started on that path, you know?
That's awesome. What was it about the conducting that just drew you to it?
Oh, wow. This is something that, you know, it's almost like a sort of a alchemistry, you know, it's so strange. You see this person standing with, you know, something, you know, like this, you know, just like a pen, the conductor's baton. And with one little flicker, with one tiny movement, 100 people play exactly on that instant.
Yes.
And it play exactly what the conductor wanted them to play, if they're good, obviously.
Yes.
And this is how an entire concert is formed. So it's just mind-blowing to see that, I think, and especially when you're on stage singing with that orchestra. You watch the conductor and you just really, you are in shock. You're amazed how, you know, with this little tiny movement, this amazing sound and this fantastic balance and all these different colors, they come, you know, they just, they're alive and they go like from you to the entire audience. It's just fantastic.
It's highly energizing. I can only imagine.
Oh God, yeah. It's insane. It's insane.
So I was asking you before the show, I was like, well, you know, when you're working with orchestras, you know, everyone's practiced the piece. And you said, well, no, not necessarily. So maybe you can expand on that. Like, how do people...
Your question was a bit different. You said, okay, so you come and you have so much time to rehearse and everything
that's
is rehearsed and you can't, you know, improvise. So that's true that we cannot really improvise in classical music. Well, not to the extent that we can in jazz music or even in, you know, public speaking. When you're on stage and you can just, you want to say something else, you can. In classical music, we have to follow the score. But essentially, it's not exactly how you would imagine it, because the musicians, they all receive, of course, the musical score. And in most, you know, famous pieces, they have played it at least, you know, dozens of times, if not hundreds of times, before you come to conduct them, you know?
Mm.
So, and then you have the challenge of establishing trust in 2 to 5 minutes with a group of, you know, 50 to 100 musicians, all top notch. Most of them, at least in the beginning, are way older than you two.
Uh-huh.
So you have that, you know, those 2 to 5 minutes to establish that connection. And then you need to be able to lead them to play exactly as you imagine and envision the piece yourself.
Oh.
So if we were to say, for example, like, da-da-da-dam, yeah, like Beethoven 5, which every conductor, you know, on earth has conducted a million times. But you still hear different interpretations, different types of styles, different types of balance, colors. So if you just like log on to YouTube right now and just put Beethoven 5, you would hear so many different ideas, so many different visions.
Yes.
So it's not really rehearsed as we would like it to be. We basically have like 2 or 3 rehearsals to, you know, perform a 2-hour concert.
Wow.
So it's a very, very, very tight schedule, and it's not as we would have liked, you know, to just have more time to really take a minute to, you know, establish everything in a calmer, you know, from a calmer point of view.
Yeah, and actually that stands out to me because I think the corporate world has built so much, it was your word earlier, pre-show, hierarchy. And and sort of construct to, well, to do this, we need to do that. What I'm hearing from that explanation of the conductor with the orchestra is that each of the orchestra members are practicing their craft, their instrument, their scores independently. And then they come together with all of that wealth of capability and create something very quickly. Through that trust and through that excitement and the vision. I love the way that you tied the vision in.
Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, you know, these are like top-notch musicians. They can all have their vision of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
They probably do. But you have to align them. You have to align them with your vision. And so in order to do that, you have to be so prepared because you want them to play not just what's written in the notes, because they will play beautifully anyway. Because, you know, as musicians, we want to play well.
Yes.
We want it to sound beautiful. It's inherently, you know, our job. But there's a huge difference between an orchestra that, you know, just plays for the sake of playing the piece and finishing it because they're not enjoying themselves, or they're so into it that it becomes a transformative experience for you as the conductor, for them as the musicians, and of course, for your clients, the audience. So this is what we aim to do in such a short amount of time.
Very cool. And you mentioned 2 to 5 minutes. You've got to build trust in 2 to 5 minutes. Where does that time frame come from? Is that like just the first kickoff of getting with a new orchestra?
Yeah. Well, when you, it goes, we have two different scenarios. One is that this is an orchestra that you already know. You either are their music director or a principal conductor. And then you have this ongoing relationship and it's easier into that it's extent that they already know you. But basically, when you come as a guest conductor, what is something that we do constantly as in our profession. So your job is to, establish that trust before you even go on stage, internally.
Yes.
Because when you go on stage, it's already too late.
Uh-huh.
Everyone is watching you. Everyone is watching your body language, your posture, your smile, your eyes, if you're connecting with them or you're just taking this aloof, standpoint, and what type of person you are. Because as musicians, we're so, we're predisposed to really reading people, reading situations, reading sound, all these things. We are very, very, we have that ability.
Fascinating.
So when you go up onto the podium and just like raise your hand and you say, hi, good morning, great to be here, so amazing to work with you guys, let's begin.
Yes.
This is, 15 seconds.
Yes.
And then you have, the first part of the symphony or whatever piece you want to start with. Within 2 to 5 minutes, they know exactly who you are.
Wow.
As a person. So yep. It's quite intimidating and it's stressful for both sides, for them as well, of course. Mm. It's not just for you as a leader, but also for them as your team. And this is exactly what goes on in the corporate world as well,
Yeah, but I guess in the corporate world, sometimes there isn't necessarily that moment of bringing it all together. Like you're not necessarily on stage, we're ready to perform because so much work's going on behind the scenes and in parallel with teams. But
I would parallel that to someone, entering a new senior position.
Yes.
And having to prove themselves within a sort of time frame. Well, obviously not 2 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But you do have this time frame that you need to show people who you are, and you are being constantly evaluated whether you like it or not.
Yes. Yeah. I know a lot of leaders will talk about their first 30 days or 60 exactly. days or 90 days.
Exactly.
You've got to set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think the fact that as a conductor working with an orchestra, perhaps that you don't often work with, that there is this method and there's these energies and these things to watch for that create that spark.
Yeah.
Clearly that's what's created your pathway into the corporate world and the
exactly.
work that you get to do with leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dive into that. So when you first started realizing, hey, this is special, there's a chemistry here that I can bring forth to other leaders, to other teams, how did you first start finding those leaders and teams to work with?
Well, I think it started a few years ago when different types of leaders from different industries came to me, to ask me about my opinion as a performer and how they can enhance and elevate their performance and their executive skills. And after I thought about it, 20 years on stage, I conducted orchestras in almost every continent. And every moment, is high stakes. Alignment is crucial because we don't have any second chances on stage. So I took those parallels and I created the symphonic leadership framework and the maestro method for executives that are dealing with the same types of challenges because I constantly face the same demands myself. So I deeply understand them.
Yeah.
And what we do is we transform executives into high-performing leaders by strengthening their communication abilities, decision-making under pressure, and anything that will help them really thrive in those dynamic corporate environments.
That's neat. Do you want to walk through either the symphonic leadership framework or the maestro method? Do we want to do that as a bit of a...
Well, we can do that just a bit. It's not... Yeah. Well, the symphonic leadership, basically, the principles behind it is that we have to make sure that everyone is connected all the time. And that finally, you know, soft skills are the power skills that we need. So it's communication, presence, trust, timing, all these things that we once thought they, you know, were a bit less important than, you know, the KPIs and all these metrics that we needed to show.
Yeah.
And so we have these principles that we work with. One is that we have to acknowledge that we are working with amazing professionals. You know, we are not above them. We are together. And they need to know that, because as leaders, we are uniquely positioned to bring out the best in them. Okay.
Yes.
So that is one key factor that for me is, you know, the basis of everything.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's not about anyone else. It's about this amazing opportunity to do something good for the world together. So the second would be remembering your purpose, remembering your why. Because what happens today, and even for me as a conductor, you know, I constantly go back to that core sensation, because, you know, usually, you travel across the globe, you have, you know, a 3-hour break,
yes,
you're jet lag, then you have to start rehearsal. It's like a 4-hour rehearsal, then tomorrow, like the next day.
So you just got to turn up and be on.
And you have to, like, really remember, why am I doing this? Like, this is insane. Who would do that?
Yeah.
So going back to my why, my personal purpose as a musician and as a leader is something that really, really helps me. I bring, you know, this incredible music to diverse audiences worldwide, to inspire them, to connect them, to really, you know, improve their world or improve their day. Just let's take it like one day at a time. So improving their day. So I would start as a leader in the corporate world, you know, always going back to, why am I doing what I'm doing? What are we doing here in this company or in my specific position,
yep,
that really motivates me, that, you know, I'm aligned with internally?
Yes.
So that would be the second principle. And the third, well, I have two more if we have time.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time.
The core
This is giving me lots of material to ask more questions.
Yes, amazing. So the two core principles of the framework are these. Leading by example is something that is really incredible in the classical music world, because as a conductor it's quite unique, because I don't play an instrument on stage usually.
Yes.
So I cannot tell my team, for example, you know, the violin player, let me show you how it's done. You know, I cannot go back and do the work for them, but I do have to lead by example, by coming super prepared, by being really respectful of everyone, by, you know, doing all these things that show everyone around me that, you know, I am someone to follow. I am someone that they should follow. And this doesn't happen, you know, by chance. It's about that connection and that intention that we put out, that we,
yes,
put out to the world. So leading by example for me is crucial. And although I cannot, you know, take the oboe and like show them, you know, and this is the micromanagement that I don't like. You know, we don't want this micromanagement as leaders. We don't want to do that. Oh, I mean, we have these amazing people. We have to trust them that they know what they're doing, and at the same time continue to lead by example. So, and the fourth one is mastering your own emotions. Which is something that is not spoken about that much. But for me, I think, and I see it all the time, it's key to achieving and maintaining trust with your reports, but also with your seniors, you know, your bosses.
Yeah.
Because they need to know that whatever happens, they can trust you. You can follow it through. They can, you know, follow your lead. And so you have to let them know that you are able to take responsibility for failures as well for, you know, the success that you're all achieving.
Yeah.
So, and on stage, you know, if something happens, I can't go to my office, shut the door, really, you know, get all worked up about it. I have instantly 10 seconds to just tell this section, for example, okay, this is not working. We have to make sure it will work in the next try. So like 10 seconds later, it has to work. I don't have the privilege of going, oh my God, I'm so tired. I'm so pissed. You know, they didn't listen. They didn't know what I wanted. I only have, you know, well, I have my baton behind us, but I only have my hands, my facial expressions, and that's it, basically, my knowledge, my persona. So mastering your emotions as a leader for me is crucial because you have to be responsible for who you are. You can't put your emotions on anyone else, even if they did not do exactly what you wanted them.
Yeah.
Well, especially if they didn't, actually. Especially.
That one's fascinating. So I get it in a rehearsal, but when you're live on stage playing and something misses, do you do a correction or do you just kind of let it go and keep moving?
Okay, so there are a few things. I mean, we have to like, there are two examples because some things you can correct like in the next two bars. So if you got a specific forte that you didn't like the specific sound, you look at them and they know that you're like, that something has happened.
Wow.
So they know for the next, you know, the next time we have to play the same thing, like two bars later.
Yeah.
Literally like 3 seconds later, usually that's the time frame. They know to do it differently. That's one scenario. And that is, it's amazing to see. I can send you videos later.
I'd love to. So if I see you kind
like,
of really
in real time, you're like, oh my God. Yeah. And the next scenario is a bit more tricky, is when something is messed up on stage and you cannot go back and correct it and it will not happen again. So these things happen.
Yeah.
And these are things that we are, as musicians, we are like one crazy people. So we remember that for the next 20 to 30 years, give or take.
Oh.
These, you know, 2 seconds of that
trauma.
Yeah. So these are things that you cannot correct.
Yeah.
But it's even, you know, it teaches you even more because you have to continue, you know, showing the orchestra, okay, so this thing happened. I'm not happy about it, but we have an hour and a half of music to go.
Yes.
So we cannot stop. We cannot change anything about it.
We can't all be grumpy and sulk.
Yeah. I usually have this like, and then just going back to that. Because there's no other way. You don't have the option of saying, okay, this was really bad. My fault, your fault. It doesn't matter whose. I mean, we were not aligned in that place. We were not in sync. And it happens because we're not robots. Yeah.
Which is kind of the beauty of it at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. So each performance is live and different from the day before, you know, the evening before when you perform the same exact piece. The same exact orchestra and conductor, it's quite different.
Yeah. So I'm getting excited to go.
That's the power of live music. Yeah, you should definitely go.
Yeah, I'm going to take the kids up this summer for sure because
amazing.
Just learning and not taking for granted like what's going on gives you a bit more of an eye to watch it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so and the thing, I mean, if you're going to a concert, then I will give you another pointer and for our audience as well. So if you go to a concert and you see this, the conductor, so always watch, you know, how the orchestra watches the conductor. But keep in mind, they have to, you know, watch the actual music.
Yes.
So basically they play, they look at their sheet music and like they raise their eyebrow, you know, their eyes in transitions or important parts. And they have this peripheral vision to see you all the time, what you're doing, as well as reading their music.
Oh, yeah.
So it might seem like they're not watching you, but they are.
Yeah.
But what happens when the conductor doesn't have that connection, you see a really interesting phenomena. And this is something that I've noticed in the corporate world as well. So what they do, all musicians, they just, like, they shift their eyes towards the concertmaster, the first violinist. Because the first violinist is the conductor's right hand.
Yes.
And they need any leader they need someone. So if you're not leading, and in the corporate world, it's just exactly, it's just amazing to watch. It's actually like watching a train wreck, you know, because I feel bad for the conductor when that happens. But in the corporate world, it's a bit more subtle, but you can see it instantly when you have a team that, okay, I mean, they take their orders from someone officially, but unofficially, they do something else and they rely on a different type of leader.
Yeah, it is. It's phenomenal seeing that kind of energy and that human nature that comes with it too. Very interesting. So I've got a ton of questions that I've written down there just around some of those principles.
let's try.
The first one, just to pick up on that word, they're amazing. I love that your first principle is acknowledge amazing professionals. And for a lot of corporate leaders out there, it would be easy for them to say, well, my team members aren't, you know, orchestra, top-notch musicians, but they are top-notch at something.
And, I mean, otherwise, why would you hire them?
Yeah.
Why would you hire them if you don't think that they're like amazing at what they do?
Yeah, exactly. And
so
I think
let's go back to that.
So that's a big gap. And I think a lot of leaders, when they're stressed, and we've seen this particularly post-pandemic, they start to kind of resent team members at times.
Yeah.
So is there a tone set that you'll do when you're coaching a leader into high performance to say, hey, let's just get this principle nailed down, that your people are amazing and that you need to treat them as such?
Well, I think, you know, we have to look at it from two different angles. One is like you're saying, listen, so sometimes you're not the one hiring. I get that. You know, you got that person. But, you know, we are in the real world. We're all adults and we have to make do with what we have. So how about we try and see the good things about this person versus only the bad, well, the bad things that you perceive, of course.
Yeah.
It's not actual bad things, but like what gets on your nerves. So that would be one angle, you know, to just like have a different perspective and see the, or even if we take it to a deeper level, see what that person that is really getting on your nerves, what they are struggling with. What they are struggling with and why are they coming to the office or in a hybrid meeting or whatever? Why are they behaving in that way? Maybe like a little conversation with you as their boss, you know, as their leader would go a long way just for them to really understand that you are, you know, you're trying to help.
Yes.
You really do care about what they are going through.
Yes.
So this is, you know, from one perspective. And the other would be to have a deeper look at yourself and ask yourself, why is that person, like, why specifically them, they get on my nerves like every single day? Why? Why is that so triggering for me? Because as leaders, we have to do that.
Yeah.
And go, you know, to the next level and see maybe this type of person doesn't need this type of leadership from me, and they need a different type of leadership from me.
Ah, interesting.
And that also happens quite a lot with different orchestras, with different musicians, different soloists, but because you can see that on stage, that different leadership types, even as a conductor, which is insane, but definitely in the corporate world, they mean a huge difference. They make all the difference in the world.
That is a fascinating way to look at it. And I like the way you said, bring out the best in them, them as individuals, I heard, in order for them to play so well as a team or an orchestra.
Yeah.
That is interesting. And you touched on micromanagement too. I know one of my mentors will always talk about micromanagement as a sure path to depression, because he's like, if you take away someone's ability to have creativity and curiosity in the way that they approach their work or their music, that they don't feel like they can be themselves. And so it makes them shut down.
That is so true. And in an orchestra, one of the first things that you learn when you study professionally, in the beginning, you really want to control every single beat. You want them, you feel like, you know, a traffic officer. You really want to control. But after a few years, especially when you work, you know, with high-end orchestras, you begin to understand that less is so much more. The minute that you release and you take, you know, a few steps back and give that, you know, provide that space exactly like you're saying, for them to be creative, to really bring their game, their musicianship, their, you know, everything. So immediately there's such like a relaxation within the members of the orchestra, and the creativity is just so much more fluid. It just flows instantly. And this goes back to, I think for me as a musician, but definitely for all of us when we grow up, you know, university and studies and corporate, and it yeah. goes in both paths. It's the same thing, that you are constantly being told what to do. Mm. And so if you do what your teacher says, you get, you know, this like check, you get the A+, whatever. So you grow up doing that. And as musicians, it's insane. Yeah. Because you do that from the age of 4.
Yes.
With, you know, high performance, insanely, you know, professional, dedicated, like, musicians. But in the corporate world, it's the same. So once you are constantly seeking approval, you never have the chance to be creative. And that is like micromanagement. It's just control, control, control. It's nothing that really helps anybody. And it doesn't help you as a leader, because you are overwhelmed with so many different things that there's no way you can control everything, like in any different situation.
That is fascinating too, that you take away their creativity. What one of my good friends, Dr. Andre Martin, talks about discretionary effort. And I think his numbers were like $9 trillion a year of lost productivity.
Exactly.
Because
that makes sense.
People are turning up to work, but they're not bringing their best selves. They're not bringing all of their energy. It's a huge opportunity if you get it right.
What I've seen in, especially, you know, in scenarios where you have this type of corporate environment where you come into the position, to your role, really, really motivated, and somewhere along the line, it just, you know, it goes down day by day, until the point where you use basically 10 to 20% of your capabilities at most.
Yes.
At most. And this is so, it's so sad to see that. It's so sad, really, because again, you hire these amazing professionals and then you just shut them down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we should try to do something else for sure.
I like that. So you then talked about, you know, getting into your purpose, and you talked about your personal purpose. So do you find that when you're going into those teams to help them all be better, that you're helping them explore their purpose too in the corporate world?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the reason is the reason that I'm dedicated to equipping leaders with power skills is so they can reach the pinnacle of their performance, you know, so they can experience that peak performance for them. And it doesn't matter if you're on stage physically, you know, in a concert hall, or on your, you know, personal stage in the office.
Yes.
But reaching, you know, that peak performance of your capabilities, your creativity, for me, it really, I love knowing that I'm making such a big difference in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it aligns with my purpose in the same way.
And that draws me into your choice of words around performance, because I'll be honest, right? I've been getting more and more disappointed with the whole high performance culture, high performance team construct, because I think it's become synonymous with highly profitable, highly efficient.
Like the grind.
And not sustainable, driving burnout.
Yeah.
But taking your context of like bringing all these amazing musicians together and bringing a vision to life and bringing color, I'm sensing that performance to you is not the KPIs and the profitability. It is more about the human energy. And
I think it can go, you know, hand in hand.
Yeah.
I think we have to be smart about it. You know, more than anything, we have to be smart about it. Being a high performer is definitely not working 12-hour shifts.
Yes.
I mean, if I have to study, for example, the score behind me is Dvořák Symphony. If I have to study that score and I would sit at the piano like, you know, 10 hours a day. Yeah, I would. Okay, start, I would understand the score faster, obviously.
Yes.
But, okay, between understanding the score and having a vision about it and mm-hmm. having a strategic, you know, idea of what I want to do as a professional, there's like a huge gap. And the more I get stressed about it, the less vision I can create. I mean, that is actually, you know, that's my framework for preparing concerts. I know to address my burnout before it happens.
Mm.
Because what happens, I mean, as a conductor, I don't have my boss here, you know, like, yeah, you have to learn, you know, bars 1 to 200 by tomorrow. Yeah, it doesn't work like that. I have to maintain, you know, this level of professionalism and know my own limits when I prepare every concert or when I rehearse with the orchestra, everything. So I know, for example, that if I feel that I got up in the morning and my mind is just really, really, you know, overwhelmed because I'm also a mom, as most of your listeners are, you know, and you have so many other things in life going on besides work. You know, you have family life, you have friends, you have things like that. And if I feel that, you know, it's going to be counterproductive to sit at my piano and try to force myself, mm-hmm. then I have to find like a different way to do it. So that doesn't mean I'm not going to work that day because, yeah, I have to get up every single day and do things that I meant to do. But I have to be creative about it. So maybe it would be, you know, going on a walk and listening to all the different interpretations of my favorite conductors of the piece and coming back more energized and with that perspective. So like for each profession, obviously it's different, but it is so crucial that you get to that point as a high performer where you are really in tune with what you need. So if you have like this crazy week of presentations and, you know, meetings, things like that, that's okay. We totally get that. I get that, you know, a public speaker, you have to do the work. But when you get off the stage, like how do you process things? What do you do to, you know, make that process better next time? So we have to be smart about it. That's the main thing. And not just like, okay, let's punch in the clock at 9 a.m., see you at 6. You've done fantastic work. That's not going to help anyone.
I think that's a really interesting construct. And I particularly like the use of the word addressing burnout before it happens. I've spoken to a lot of people out of the military, and I'm seeing a parallel there because a lot of elite teams in the military, before they go and perform their operation, they'll play with different ways to approach the operation. Mm-hmm. And then once they've done the operation, they actually create space and time to come back and do the after action review and the debriefs. So it sounds like you can do that a little bit with your music and with the orchestra work. How does that play out if you're working with a leader of a business? Do you create time as a coach to kind of come in and, you know, spend time with them?
Exactly. So we do two different, three, but two, like the basic different paths, options. And one would be the one-on-one coaching where we really have the time to prepare the strategies, prepare the different tools, work and implement the different tools, but of course also decompress, debrief, all these actions. You know, we have the time to do that together because we carve out, you know, the hour for us to speak and take really a moment to zoom out a bit, zoom out a bit and just to really process everything that is going on. And the second is for the executive leadership teams, that the work that we're doing is coming in, either myself or my teams by ourselves or with actual professional musicians.
Oh, cool.
And so we do workshops with musicians from a quartet and even a full orchestra. And in those sessions, whether it's a 3-hour, you know, workshop or a full day, what we do is we work through all these different tools, these different skills that are needed, but show them in real time how their, you know, their facial expressions, their body language, their personal interactions the musicians.
Yeah.
What happens in real time? And then it's not the theory, it's the actual practice that, you know, like lights that light bulb.
Yeah.
And it instantly you get that feedback, because the musicians, you know, once you do like here, 1, 2, 3, and they're not going to react like however you wanted them to, but however, like exactly how you showed them. So we do those different things, the workshops, either a few hours or full day with different lectures, things like that. But with the musicians, it's a fantastic experience. And in the one-on-one. And of course, in keynotes that I do personally, what we always do is we convert the like the entire audience into an orchestra. So I actually conduct, the audience. We bring out instruments, things like that. And sometimes we bring musicians on stage as well and have the executives, you know, try to conduct after we do the basic conducting skills. So it's so much, it's so unique and fun to, and also what we do is, you know, every workshop is bespoke. So it depends on each challenge, basically, each company challenge, each executive challenge. Yeah.
That's super neat. And I can see how that would, going into your last 2 points on leading by example and mastering the emotions, I can see how that construct kind of lets you really play with it. And that's, I think that's something that we don't, as leaders of teams or as team members in, you know, more executive and leadership teams, we don't create enough time for. It's all work and not enough, like...
True. That is creation very, very of space. True. I think what also is really crucial, and this is something that I have been struggling with myself, and that is one of the reasons that I wanted to address it and to find a solution for it, is the isolation that we feel as leaders. As a conductor, it's quite insane because I don't have any peer group, you know? I come as a leader for 2-3 rehearsals, the concert, and then I go back while the musicians have been playing and continue to play with each other for years sometimes.
Yeah.
And leaders, corporate leaders, have the same sense of isolation and overwhelm. And so we constantly have to find ways to speak to our, you know, our friends in similar positions or someone that would understand or coach. We have to talk about it because otherwise, you know, bottling everything by ourselves. And that is like one of the main reasons for burnout, because you're so, you feel so alone in your, you know, in your day-to-day challenges that you forget that you have other options.
And I particularly like the way you described that bottling up of the emotions, because if you are mastering your emotions, you need to be aware of them. And often as leaders, I think we get isolated, we lock down and we say we're going to work our way through this.
Exactly.
And we fail to recognize what emotions are there that are driving certain behaviors or frustrations with team members or, you know, anxieties with a board or whatever it might be. So that is super powerful.
I think that's one of the main reasons that we really have to be able to adjust our well-being, our emotions, and to see what is actually going on behind that anxiety, behind that stress. And so we don't get to that high performance culture that you mentioned before that is all about, you know, the grind, the profit, like why are we losing money, what is going on. So this is highly unsustainable.
I agree. I think everything that I'm hearing from you, Rohit, is that there is a way to have both and to sustain
to keep that connection between the inner part and the outer part. And this is what we do as musicians, that like this is our main job, you know. I mean, as musicians, it's sometimes, you know, someone asked me, do you get really emotional when you conduct? Because the music is so beautiful. Say, listen, when I conduct, I don't have the privilege of getting emotional.
Mm.
That is the audience's privilege.
Yes.
I have to get the work done.
Yeah.
I can get emotional before I can get emotional after. I can use that emotion to construct my vision, to be really aligned with what I do and why I'm doing it, and to convey that to the orchestra.
Yeah.
But I can't do that on stage. I mean, I can convey it to the musicians, but we all have to be so, so focused that, you know, this is just something that you have to do.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating, that particularly the bringing the emotions into the vision piece, because I think that's something that we also don't spend enough time on. So if you can go away and you can think about what it really means to you as a leader, what it really means to your team, to your customers, I like that piece around, you know, it's for our customers to enjoy that privilege in the moment.
Yeah.
I think that's a really powerful piece that, you know, maybe a lot of leaders and teams do their vision work and then kind of set it and put it on the shelf for 3 years. It needs to be exactly. A more of a continuous exactly. Mm-hmm. Cyclical process.
Yeah. I think it's always, you know, going back to that place and are we delighting our customers? Are we doing like exactly what we planned on doing? And if you can take it, you know, from a corporate point of view, from a business point of view, and you see like the best corporate leaders are the ones who really trust their gut feeling.
Yes.
And do these little pivots, although the market or these experts tell them not to. And you see that all the time.
Yeah.
You see like Mark Zuckerberg buying Instagram for $1 billion, uh-huh. even though, you know, at the time everyone laughed at him, like, what are you doing?
And then
are
he
you
crushed
insane?
It.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many examples. It's just going back to listening to yourself as a leader before anything else. And this is what, you know, the core of our work with executives.
That's awesome. And I love the fact that we didn't touch on, but when I asked you before the show, you said one of your hopes and excitements for the future of teamwork is that we shift more from the hierarchical into this new version of like energy and connection.
Yeah.
I think today you've shown me certainly, and I believe our listeners, a lot of really interesting learnings and takeaways from that orchestra environment into the teams that we work in. And mm-hmm. I particularly like that your workshops actually bring in some of the music and the conducting.
Oh yes. We just did that last week, one here in Barcelona where I live. This was like a conference and an HR conference, and there was like 200 people, and I brought this string quartet.
Yes.
And given that we are in Spain, I thought, you know, which would be like the best songs for them to conduct, because I choose, you know, popular songs, obviously, not like Beethoven, Mozart. And so I was like thinking, okay, I chose Bésame Mucho.
Yes.
And which is super famous. And Aleluya by Leonard Cohen. And when I suggested the two, they were like, Bésame Mucho. So, you know, exactly. You bring them to that point where like, yeah, I can conduct this piece that I love so much, and they were ecstatic, you know?
That's so cool.
It's so much fun. And it doesn't, you know, because I think these, you know, leadership workshops, they don't have to be like theory and, you know, another like boring type of going through the motions type of workshops. Whereas we can just have fun and build that connection again.
Yeah. Energy, inspiration, it just gets back to the human nature.
Exactly.
It's phenomenal.
Exactly.
So
because we're being replaced by AI anyway. So like, let's maintain that whatever we can.
That's it. Let's over index on the human.
Yes.
That's so cool. So if any of our listeners want to reach out, Rohit, for a keynote speech or for some consulting or workshop, how do they best find you and BHZ Consulting?
Well, I mean, we are everywhere. LinkedIn, of course.
Yeah.
LinkedIn and our website, bhzgroup.com. Yeah. And of course, Instagram, Facebook, like any social media, we're on it. Yeah.
That's neat. Well, we'll definitely add that to the show notes. And I'm intrigued to bring you and the team into some work that we're doing around this new concept of a healthy team. We're going to be doing a summit in Boston later in the year.
Fantastic.
So maybe we need to bring a quartet and actually do some live conducting and play in there.
That would be so much fun. We'll think of like the Boston's favorite song.
exactly. No, this has been awesome. Well, thanks for being my first podcast back from parental leave too. It's been
hugely energizing. Wow, and congratulations on the fourth child. I can't believe it. It's just insane.
Thank you.
And well, to your wife. Like,
yeah, she did the real work.
Way more. Exactly.
That's it.
She did
That's
the real work and constantly doing it. Yeah.
That's it. But sure. No, this has been a blast. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Dave, for having me. It was such a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,